Before I turn this over to Patrick, I'm going to talk to you about commitments that Patrick and I and Cherry and Brandon and others involved in the One Mind campaign are going to make to you, and those that I'd like to have you make to us. The first is, I'm going to give you several for us. They are, first, we are going to remain inclusive. Anyone else who's not in this room who you think should be in this room and wasn't, just let us know about it and we'll include them. That's organizations, people, or other interested parties. Second, we will remain transparent to you about our progress. We've already scheduled a second meeting at the Society for Neuroscience, and we've already scheduled a second symposium at UCLA that you heard about from Chancellor Block. We will also report to you in our website and through other social network means and any other way you think is important for us to do. Third, we are committed to establishing a network that will allow global sharing of this information, everything from patient records to collaborative research, successes, failures, and developing what's necessary to do this in intellectual property. That work is already underway. If you're not part of that activity and you'd like to be, just let us know. Fourth, we will establish a public-private partnership, much like Semitech, much like IMEC that you heard about, that will allow us to bring pharma and the private sector together with the public sector to allow us to manage this process in a smarter and more effective way and bring capital, lab space, and compounds to the party to allow us to repurpose them. Fifth, we intend to establish a patient registry. In that registry, we hope to get people to volunteer to give us tissue samples and establish a tissue bank that will include up to 1 million samples. We hope to establish a genome project that will allow us to get up to 1 million genomes in this process. We also accept and hope to have people willing to provide us patient records and to indicate that they are willing to be a part of clinical trials so that we build a robust database of people to help us move forward on the patient and patient advocacy side. On the final commitment we'll make to you, at least for today, is that we will launch an aggressive campaign of public information and fundraising that will allow us to fulfill the campaign goals that we set for each other with both dollars, time, volunteers, and other things. What I'd like you to commit to are the following. To learn, talk to yourselves and to each other about what you learned, what you're going to do differently, and who you're going to collaborate with after you leave this room. I'd like to have you help us figure out what are the 10 things we need to know first in order to make a major difference in the care and lives of people we love. We don't need to know 1,000 things. There's 10 things. I want to do those first 10, then we'll do the next 10. What are those 10 things? And finally, I'd like you to continue to be of one mind. That means more than just an attitude. It's actions. It's how you conduct yourselves and what you do together. When we leave this room, you're going to be sent a form that talks to you about this meeting, how you like this meeting, and it's going to ask you whether you want to sign up to be part of this One Mind campaign. And it's also going to ask you if you'll allow us to use your name and if you want to share information with other people and to check those boxes. I hope you check them all, and I hope you stay with us because we're not going anywhere until we get this problem resolved. Thanks. All right. So I am privileged to introduce Patrick, who doesn't need any introduction. It's been a privilege to work with he and the Kennedy family. It's a family of enormous dedication to healthcare, enormous credibility in this space, and he's a wonderful person by both his human nature and his care and compassion. So let's let Patrick give us the final call to action. Patrick.
Didn't didn't Garen just sound like that mission control? Failure's not an option. That's the beauty of working with Garen Staglin. He's a successful businessman, but the most important endeavor in his life is personal. And that's what the message from all of this is today. I don't know anyone who could come from this conference and not remember the extraordinary testimonials of those who are courageous enough to come onto this stage and share their personal stories. Let's give all of them one more time a round of applause. When I first spoke about the moonshot, I had Tom Insel said to me, "That's so exciting." And of course, I loved seeing those movies and everything, but for me, they were movies. Tom Insel remembers when he and his fellow students used to gather around the TV to watch the Apollo program, landings, launches, and the like. When I saw people as preeminent as Tom Insel have that reaction, I knew we were on to something. And when I saw people like Steve Hyman say yes when every fiber in his body told him to say no, I knew there was something powerful about that moonshot. And when I heard Garen talk about being a Vietnam veteran and what that meant to him to serve his country, I knew we were on to something really big. And that guiding us all is that sense of wonder, that sense of heart and passion that's going to allow the heart and the soul to be the real answers to curing diseases of the mind. That's the power of this conference. And to symbolize once again what this moonshot represents in the beginning of One Mind, I want to present a bust, the one of only two that I am presenting in this conference, to the second person who's had as much to do, if not the most, to getting all of this done. Garen says, "Patrick's the sizzle on the steak." And he's right. I can go around and give good speeches if sometimes I end up doing that, but at the end of the day, I got to have a back room. And Garen Staglin is that back room. When I was running the mental health parity effort, there were only a handful of people in this country who put their money where their mouth was and not only were philanthropic in the science world, but understood the power of the political system and how they needed to be involved politically. Only a handful. And when you think about the burden of this illness, it's shocking that so few people are involved politically. Garen was the exception. Long ago, he decided to dedicate himself to this issue because it's the most personal issue to him and Sherry. And when I met Brandon, I knew why. So for me, it's an honor, as someone who happened to be born into this family with the last name Kennedy, to really honor a man who is the truest testament of what it means to persevere, carry on the legacy, and fight that fight. Garen, please come up. We'll get it after. Garen and I have had the great privilege of meeting with many of you over the course of building this campaign. I want to say John Sack has been there to help us pull this together, and wasn't his father and his dedication to this cause the ultimate and example why we're doing this? Every meeting we go into, it seems like, and then I get around to quoting my uncle, and I said, you know, they say this is going to be really difficult. But my uncle said, we don't do these things because they're easy, and invariably, and Garen can testify it, every single meeting someone responds, we do this because it's hard. It's remarkable, the power of this imprimatur of the moonshot. I want to share with you another personal story for me, and that is growing up in my family and the fact that when it came to my brother and his cancer, we had no problem saying a family member of ours was suffering from a disease that needed to be treated with the utmost urgency. The whole world turns its sympathy to my family when my brother had cancer. It motivated my father to fight for national health insurance. Because ultimately, it isn't about health insurance, it's about taking care of the people you love. But I was struck early on by the difference between the illness that afflicted my brother and the illness that afflicted my mother. In a real sense, she had the double challenge of not only confronting an illness, but to add insult to that injury, she had to confront the prejudice and stigma of being labeled as someone who wasn't as deserving as another member of my family to the same urgent medical care that we didn't think twice about when it came to providing it for my brother. My mother has been an example. And just the other day when my cousin Caroline was here, she was coming from the John F. Kennedy anniversary of the Profiles in Courage. And I want to tell you today, my mother is my profile in courage for all that she's done to stand up to this stigma and live a life of fulfillment and dignity. So 50 years ago tomorrow, almost to this day, my uncle John F. Kennedy turned America's attention to the moon. And there's those who said that a goal of that magnitude at a time when resources were so scarce was a fool's errand. There were those who said America lacked the confidence to attain a goal so literally high and so far away. Many Americans worried that our country's rising fortunes had reached a plateau, that our pioneering spirit was part of our past and not our future, that other nations, competitor nations, would soon take the lead in science and technology. John F. Kennedy rejected those notions. When he declared the new frontier, he brought with him a vision of a future defined not by promises but by challenges. He asked Americans to join in a shared spirit of purpose, to embrace an age where, I quote, we will witness not only the new breakthroughs in weapons of destruction, but also a race for the mastery of the sky and the rain, the ocean and the tides, the far side of space, and the inside of men's minds. End of quote. That was the vision he captured. That's what was called the new frontier. And as we know now, the time that my uncle had was not on his side, but history was. The Peace Corps, the Moonshot, the the Green Revolution, Silicon Valley, the human genome, we have explored as a nation, we've pioneered. We have met so many of the challenges described by my uncle, except one. While we've mapped the galaxies hundreds of millions of light years away and mapped out the genome of countless plant and animal species and mapped out the computer circuits that can perform billions of calculations per second, our map of the human brain is incomplete. As a result, our ability to understand and treat the brain is inadequate. This is not to say that we haven't made great progress, and thanks to the brilliance and dedication of people here in this room, we know more about the brain than we ever did before. But we've lacked a galvanizing moment. We've had a war on cancer, but never a war on depression. We've had a war on poverty, but never a war on Parkinson's. We've had a race to outer space, but never a race to inner space. And that race begins today. Today, our efforts go from a scattershot effort to a moonshot effort. From a hectic yet disparate strands of brilliance in our laboratories to the first coordinated, urgent, nationwide commitment to map the human mind. There are those who will say that we cannot achieve this in this decade, that the goals we have set for ourselves in the last 2 days are too great. But science is not the obstacle, as we learned here the last 2 days. Indifference, the lack of knowledge is not our problem. It's the lack of political will in this country to do the job. My uncle went on to say, I believe we possess all the resources and talents necessary, but the fact of the matter is that we have never made the national decisions or marshaled the national resources required for such leadership. We have never specified long-range goals on an urgent time schedule or managed our resources and our time so as to ensure their fulfillment. That is true with respect to neuroscience today. Funding for brain research is declining, leading to fewer experimental treatments. Scientific expertise is scattered. Our approach for research is often fragmented. The knowledge we do possess, which is vast, is isolated in silos, and incentives for collaboration are lacking. The mysteries of an organ as complex as the brain simply cannot be unlocked with a scattershot effort. We demand a moonshot. Mapping the brain today is a challenge as daunting, if not more so, than reaching the moon 2 generations ago. Thousands of different kinds of cells in the brain communicate with one another in a form that an estimate 100 trillion possible connections are made. No undertaking in the history of science has ever been more complex. That is why I can imagine no better scientific team to undertake this task than the people in this room. You are the pioneers. As I said, you are the astronauts of this new frontier. You're the explorers, the discoverers, the people with compassion and the commitment, and most importantly, the will to do the job. You don't need words of inspiration or motivation from me, but there are 2 words I would like to deliver, and that is thank you. Thank you for all the work that you've done to date. And moreover, thank you for all the work that you're going to do tomorrow and the day after and the day after that. My father benefited, as I mentioned before, from great neuroscience, and it bent the curve for him. He was given only 2 months to live, and he survived 18. It was a time remarkable not just for the longevity, but for the quality. He finished his memoir. He said a long and rich and wonderful goodbye. Everyone deserves no less. We can bend that curve for every family in America who has a loved one who needs their help by the work that you do. The first step, the constant step, is reminding ourselves of the purpose that all brought us into this room. What matters in what we do is not what happens in the independent laboratories, it's what happens in the lives of individuals. There are risks, of course, in crossing any new frontier. The greatest one we face, though, is the one we have to conquer. It's the fear of failure. And above all, it's not to shun the people who suffer, it's to embrace them. Not to marginalize them, but to love them. And as Garen Staglin said, instead of running away from the problem, let's run towards it. And let's be clear, the work that we undertake is not merely science, it's an issue of civil rights. When we single out a person for discriminatory attitude simply because the malady involved the brain rather than the heart or the kidneys or any other part of the body, that's a civil rights issue. And no triumph of all in my years in Congress meant as much as being part of the effort to add a new chapter to that civil rights struggle by passing the Mental Health Parity and Addiction Equity Act. When we shun a returning hero because of the particular kind of trauma they incurred in the service of our country, that's not only a civil right, that's a travesty, it's a moral outrage, and it must end. President Kennedy once said, "Who amongst us would change the color of their skin and be content with the counsels of patience and delay?" Today we ask no different. Who amongst us would change places with a soldier with PTSD or TBI and be content with those who say it's going to take too long to get to this science? Who amongst us would change places with Merrill Comer and say it's going to take too long to get to the answer for Alzheimer's? Who amongst us would trade places with people that were talked about in this room, people like Peter Sack, who may not have the resilience and the positive attitude and the sense of hope that Peter demonstrated when he spoke today? Who amongst us would want to stand in the shoes of people suffering and then do nothing? Some of us stand here today because either we or those we love do not need to change places with such people. We already know in our own lives the suffering that can be brought to an end because of the mapping of the brain and the advancement of neuroscience. Others of us know that all that stands between us and any number of the dreaded neurological disorders that you saw portrayed here in this two-day conference is a single diagnosis away for each and every one of us. And all of us are here because we reject the counsels of patience and delay who say that this is too much, the time isn't right, the money isn't there, the politics doesn't work. We've come here to launch One Mind for Research because we reject the counsels of patience and delay. Our challenge is to establish and maintain laser-sharp focus on changing the lives of people with brain diseases, not because of research for research's sake, but a coordinated effort whose progress will be measured in the progress to treat patients in their daily lives. Above all, our challenge is to summon what we most need, and that's a moonshot, not a scattershot. In the film Apollo 13, a group of astronauts watching, afterwards Jim Lovell tells his wife, "It wasn't a miracle. We just decided to go." Today, we're deciding to go. We're deciding to travel to inner space to discover the most intricate workings of the human mind. We're deciding to explore the most open and complex frontier that science has ever known. And we're deciding to go now, to arrive in this decade. That's why I'm pleased, as I also am proud, to close this meeting, this launch of a new era of brain science, the moonshot of our time, with the statement that has brought thrills to millions of Americans and now will bring hope to millions more. Ladies and gentlemen, we have liftoff. Thank you.